more Americans without health care, doctors, nurses, and errors, diabetes and heart failure, and we're going to take a look at common oral diabetes medications. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to this week's show. I am getting myself ready for the Christmas holiday here, and it just keeps coming faster and faster every year, I guess. But I hope the rest of you are able to get your holiday duties finished and still get your work time in. And I hope not too many of you are working over the holiday time, but I know that many of you do, so I will be as well. In fact, this episode comes out 1 week before Christmas Day, and my promise to you is you're going to have an episode available Christmas Day. So if you're working and want to listen to The Nursing Show sometime Christmas Day, I'll have an episode posted up for you so that you can have that as well. Because I'm working, you're working, we all need to be taking care of our patients throughout the holidays. Healthcare doesn't stop just because somebody decides we should have the day off. So we need to make sure that we take care of each other, and I'm here to take care of my end. If you'd like to get more information about The Nursing Show, maybe you're a new listener, don't forget you can head over to nursingshow.com. That is the site where we have articles, show notes for every episode. You can listen to the shows over there. You can also follow up on the links, both the news stories and the different tip segments that we cover on the show, because I think it's important to provide you the resources to go and look in depth at what we've talked about in brief here on the show. So you can go over there, click on the link right at the top for show notes, and follow up on each and every episode that way, or just search for an episode topic if you've been listening to a show recently, and you can find it using the search box right there on the front page as well. Of course, I want to thank all of the long-term listeners, people that have been sending in comments and suggestions for the show. It's great to hear from all of you, and I want to remind you that you can send in your comments directly to me here. Send those comments in to comments@nursingshow.com. I love to hear from all of you, and it's a great way to contribute to the show. This is a community effort, and it's helpful for me when you send me in a news link or a tip idea, because that tells me what you want to hear more of, and it really helps keep the show moving along, and I do appreciate that. Time to jump on into this week's news, and I'm going to lead off with a story I picked up over at abcnews.com. This is a story that was reported by Reuters, and it's looking at the fact that sometime during the time period since January 2008, the Centers for Disease Control have estimated that nearly 20% of the U.S. population, approximately about 60 million people, at some point went without health insurance. And this has been, again, part of the ongoing debate. But we've seen this, and I know that anybody that's worked in a facility, or even for some of my paramedic colleagues that work in the pre-hospital setting, we see a lot of people that are without health insurance, without regular primary care coverage, and we see that in many ways that their medical conditions reach a point where they have to use an emergency room to treat a rather common problem and end up causing a lot of additional cost both to them and to the healthcare system in general, because if they can't afford health insurance, they often can't afford to repay the cost of their medications and their treatment. And so this will be interesting as this continues to move forward. But I wonder if any of you have seen similar trends. This seems like a shocking number that 20% of the people out there went without health insurance. I didn't realize the numbers were quite that large. This is coming in from the CDC, so I trust this more than I do a lot of the political political resources out there that seem to find different numbers for different things. The CDC seems to have looked at this when they were covering health statistics, analyzing people who responded to a survey that they conducted. And this is actually an ongoing survey. So this is the survey numbers to date. They are continuing to compile information on people and their access to healthcare. And it's important for us as nurses to look at that and do what we can, I think, to point our patients in the right direction, to help our patients live healthier lifestyles, and by doing so, reduce the cost of their medical fees out of pocket, whether they are insured or not. Certainly, if the healthier they are, the fewer medical services they are likely to need. Moving along, I found another interesting article. This is from news.sky.com, and it's a study out of the UK that says that doctors are using nurses and pharmacists regularly as a safety net to correct their prescription errors. And, you know, this is something that we, as nurses, really need to keep in mind, that when we are dealing with giving medications in the hospital, we really need to have an understanding of safe ranges of dosing for certain patients, contraindications, important lab results that need to be reviewed. All of these things should be in the back of our mind when we're administering medications. And I'm sure most of you are not relying strictly on whatever the doctor ordered, that you are just thinking and double checking those things, or that you have a department or a unit pharmacist that is reviewing all medication orders as a matter of course for medication safety. But this is something that something that the National Health Service in the UK is looking at, trying to look at why there are some places that have a poor, what they're calling, safety culture. And I think that's a good way to put it. Many of us deal with safety cultures in many different ways, whether it's dealing with fall risks, patients dealing with problems with decubitus ulcers or things like that, preventable problems that fall into the nursing care area. And I think that we can also include safe medication administration as part of that. We really need to be reviewing medication orders for our patients. And, you know, it's hard to do when it seems like all you're doing is moving from med to med because you have so many patients in some cases. And I'd like to see that there's got to be a way that we can alleviate some of that, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. I'd love to hear back from you. Have you seen that there's a way around this, or is this something that we should be doing? We should be relying on each other for safe medication and safe practices, that it should be a team approach, that it's not a crutch used by physicians, rather, but a team approach where everyone has a stake in safe medication administration. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Again, you can leave comments right over at nursingshow.com. On the show notes, there's a link for leaving comments, or you can go ahead and send in your comments by email to comments@nursingshow.com. Finally, a story that I found posted over at webmd.com looking at popular diabetes medications. And we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about oral diabetes meds in our tip of the week this week. But and many of you may remember a couple of years ago, the medications Avandia and Actos were brought up as a possible congestive heart failure risk. And the FDA applied a warning to those medications for patients that were at risk for CHF. And so, lo and behold, another study's come out saying, well, maybe those medications aren't causing increased risk for heart failure, but it seems that two other types of medications might be causing that problem and be causing a higher risk factor for heart failure. And this is the medication metformin and the sulfonylureas. These medications are commonly prescribed. They've been around for a long time. And, you know, my feeling is that I think patients that have diabetes are at higher risk for a lot of things. And is it really related to their medication choices? I think that it's very hard to study this group of people and really pull out all of the variables and try to narrow it down to, oh, it must just be the medication. It seems to me that you know, diabetes patients, if they can manage their type 2 diabetes through diet and exercise, may very well not need very much medication support at all. And yet many people, and I've seen this in family members and patients I've come in contact with, they seem to think that, well, I take a pill for that. I don't have to really watch my diet quite so much because I take a pill for that. And consequently, they don't change their diet, they don't change their lifestyle, and they remain at high risk for many of the complications associated with type 2 diabetes, including, you know, because of their overweight status, hypertension, heart increased demands on the heart, so they become at a higher risk for heart failure. And I am interesting. It's interesting to see these studies. They seem to come back and forth. I haven't been able to look into exactly who funded this study, but I think that we need to have some more light of day applied to many of these studies, because it seems to me that medications and the pharmaceutical industry has a lot at stake here. And certainly they want to clear their own medication at the same time they are pointing the finger perhaps somewhere else. And I don't know that that's the case here, but I would like to see some other studies on other types of treatments applied to patients with diabetes rather than just medication treatments. Let's take a look at oral anti-diabetics for this tip this week, and we're going to look at a couple of different things. First of all, oral anti-diabetics obviously are available for treatment of diabetes, but specifically for type 2 diabetes. This has often been called in the past adult-onset diabetes or non-insulin-dependent diabetes. These are oral medications that are taken to assist in the management of diabetes. They work through a number of different mechanisms in the body, including increasing insulin production in the pancreas. This stimulates the pancreas beta cells to produce more insulin. Also, some of these meds act by improving the affinity of the cells to take in insulin, and also to decrease glucose production in the liver. If you remember, glucose is absorbed from the bloodstream as blood sugar drops. Insulin is not produced, and the liver is then urged to dump more glucagon's released and causes the liver to dump sugar into the bloodstream from its stores. This can block that. Some of these medications can block that liver function of dumping glucose into the blood. And reducing GI absorption. If we can reduce the amount of sugar absorbed from the food we eat, then obviously that would limit the amount of glucose going into the bloodstream as well. These medications fall in a number of different classes. The sulfonylureas, the meglitinides, biguanides, thiazolidinediones, and hopefully I pronounced that one right, that's a mouthful, and alpha-glucosidase inhibitors. We'll look at each of these in turn. Let's start off with the sulfonylureas. The sulfonylureas are medication that's been around for a long time. It acts as an insulin production increase. It works in the affecting the pancreas, causing it to produce more insulin in the beta cells. And that increased insulin production, of course, then provides more insulin to take in more glucose at the cellular level. There should be caution for any patient with a sulfa allergy, any patient who's pregnant, and any patient with any sign of infection. And sulfonylureas can have an adverse interaction with some antibiotics as well. So we want to be aware of that. Side effects, most of these medications, one of the key side effects is going to be hypoglycemia. Anything that's going to affect the uptake of glucose from the bloodstream, if it speeds that taking in of blood sugar, then obviously anything that if we don't replace that blood sugar with something, we can have hypoglycemia happen. So we need to counsel and train our patients with all of these medications to help them understand how it works and that this is part of an overall regimen and that they need to make sure they're eating food regularly, maintaining their glucose intake and stores, and also be prepared for periods of hypoglycemia for a variety of reasons that could be caused, and that they should be prepared with glucose tablets or some other rapid glucose replacement therapy food item that they can use to help themselves. Also, GI upset and in some cases rash are present as a side effect in this medication. Common names for this medication I've seen, these are some of the ones I've seen more commonly, glimepiride, gliburide, and glipizide. You may have seen others, and there's a lot of medications that fall into this category. It's been around for a long time. Most of these medications are eliminated in the liver now. There was an earlier generation of sulfonylureas that was eliminated primarily by the kidneys, but the second generation sulfonylureas now are mostly eliminated by the liver. And so with a lot of these meds, because they are eliminated, metabolized, and removed by the liver, we need to make sure we have patients with good liver function, or we could have increased levels of medication remaining in the body beyond what we would expect. Meglitinides. The meglitinides are medications that also increase insulin production. Some of the notes I found said this was specifically for after meals, and I think that that may be related directly to the fact that this should be taken with a meal. The patients who take this medication should be really thinking about regular food intake, several small meals throughout the course of the day rather than just a few large meals. And this will maintain, again, that regular intake of blood sugar by the GI tract to replace what's used up by medications that assist with insulin production or glucose absorption. Again, precautions for this include precautions for anybody who are pregnant or may be pregnant, liver disease, and patients with ongoing infection. And side effects, again, hypoglycemia and GI upset are the most common side effects seen for this particular class of medications. Medication I've seen for this is Prandin, Repaglinide. There are other meglitinides that are no longer used, but this is the one that seems to be still available in limited cases out there. So you may find patients that have taken this med. The biguanides, this is metformin or glucophage. We see this medication all the time. And this operates by limiting glucose production in the liver. Remember, the liver will activate some of its stores, converting the stores to glucose and releasing that glucose into the bloodstream. This inhibits some of that. It also has a limited effect of increasing tissue affinity for glucose and tissue affinity for use of insulin to transport glucose across the cell membranes. So there is some side effect of that. And so this is used in combination in many cases. You'll have combination medications that are combination of metformin and some sulfonylurea medication in most cases when you see those combination drugs. So it's something to be aware of, that you may see a medication that has two different active ingredients, and if it's metformin's one of them, it's likely the other one is the sulfonylurea. Precautions for this medication: anyone who is pregnant, anyone with liver disease, and we have a target lab value here. We don't want to use this in any patient with a creatinine level higher than 1.5. That's a high level of creatinine for most patients, but this is one of those contraindications that I've found, and I thought I'd relay that on to you. Side effects include metabolic acidosis and GI upset. Again, we want to be very aware of the effects that these medications have and also how they work in tandem with other medications in the body. Really, you want to be looking and running your medication interaction functions on some of the computer programs you'll have access to in facilities, or for those of you that have a pocket version of something like Pepid or of Lexicomp in your iPhone or something like that, or on your BlackBerry, you can check out your medication interactions there. But you do want to make sure you understand how these medications interact with other medications. And again, glucophage and metformin are the two versions that names we commonly see. Glucophage is your brand name. Metformin is your generic name. Alpha-glucosidase inhibitors, well, If you look at the name, you can help figure out what this is. Alpha-glucosidase, ACE, means it's some kind of enzyme. It helps to break down or formulate glucose. And this is a carbohydrate enzyme present in the GI tract. And if you inhibit that, then you can inhibit the absorption of glucose. And that's exactly how this works. It reduces GI absorption of glucose and keeps that glucose, that carbohydrate, in the GI tract and passes it on through into the feces. There is precautions for pregnancy and breastfeeding. This can pass into the breast milk, so we don't want to have any patient taking one of these who may be pregnant or begin breastfeeding. This medication is contraindicated for them. We don't want to limit the absorption of food for the baby in any way. Inflammatory bowel disease. Anyone with inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, any of those other issues with the lower GI tract, we want to avoid anything because, we're increasing the amount of bulk coming down the pipeline, if you'll excuse the way I say that. And this can cause additional issues because some of the side effects have to do with increased diarrhea, increased flatulence, and bloating. And so there's some issues associated with that. Also, again, any patient with liver disease, and the target creatinine level for this class of medication is greater than 2. So we want to make sure that we're contraindicated for anybody with a creatinine level greater than 2, which again is high anyway, but you may have that as a target value in your facility or your practice. Side effects, again, GI upset, abdominal pain, flatulence. This is because we're keeping all this extra bulk in the GI tract and passing it on through, and this can cause some issues down the pipe. We see these medications names on Precos with the generic name Acarbose and Glycet or Miglitol, and you should you may recognize those. And these also can be used in combination with other oral anti-diabetes medications such as a sulfonylurea or something like metformin. Thiazolidinediones. There's your big name of the week. If you can learn to pronounce that one, you'll be a winner with all your friends in nursing school. Thiazolidinediones, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong too, but that's the way I learned it, is a class of medications that will actively increase the ability of the tissues to utilize insulin to transport glucose within to the inside of the cells for use in metabolism. And so this can be also used in combination with other medications. These are some of the meds that were previously under precaution. And again, we looked at these, Avandia and Actos. Precaution for pregnancy, breastfeeding, liver disease, and there's the FDA cardiac and CHF warning for these medications. And I think that, you know, we need to be watching all of our patients for other side effects of their diabetes and the other aspects that cause their diabetes, high weight gain and things like that that will put additional stress on the heart can put them at greater risk for cardiac issues as well. And we talked about that back in the news segment from the episode this appeared in. But you should be aware that there is a cardiac and CHF warning for these class of medications, and there may be others coming for some of the other diabetes meds. Side effect, primary side effect that's saw for this was headache. It doesn't seem to be a whole lot of other major side effects seen with this, other than, of course, the issues with cardiac problems. And again, you'll see these medications, Avandia, Rosiglitazone, I think is how you pronounce the generic version, and Actos, and Pioglitazone. So check these medications out and make sure you're reviewing your warnings and safety mechanisms for administration or training and education about these meds. And make use of any of your diabetes educators. If you're in a facility that has a dedicated diabetes educator, this is a good time to bring them in and do some continuing education with you and other members of the nursing staff, because these meds change, understanding of how these meds work change, and all of these classes. There's some really good links in the show notes. I would urge you to follow up on those links and make sure you have checked out them. There's a lot of good information and educational materials for both you as a caregiver and also for your patients over at the National Institutes of Health. If you search diabetes and NIH in any Google field, you'll be able to find a lot of these links. But I've provided a couple in the show notes for you, taking you directly to information on these particular oral medications. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you need to check back in for the show notes for everything discussed in this episode. All of the news items, tip files, and other links mentioned are all available in the show notes for this and every other episode. And you need to follow up on the information because I can provide only general information here. It's your job to follow the links and look at the resources and see how they apply to your own scope of practice. I'll do my job here and get you as much information as I can. It's your job to follow up, make sure that the information gels with what you know and what you're supposed to be doing in your area. I'd like to urge all of you to comment and get back in touch with me here at The Nursing Show. You can reach me, of course, by leaving comments over at nursingshow.com. There are comment links at the bottom or near the top of every single article. You can also reach me by email, comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also get a hold of me over at Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. It's time to close out the show as you all are getting ready for your holiday week. And I want to close it out with a holiday tune from somebody we've played a lot here on the show before. And this is Matthew Ebel's Walk a Thousand Miles. It's one of his Christmas songs. I like this one. If you like what you hear, go ahead and check out Matthew's site, MatthewEbel.com, E-B-E-L.com. You'll find a lot of his music. There's also a link in the show notes that'll take you directly to iTunes, and you can spend some 99 cents to purchase this or any of his other songs. It's a great way to support these artists that are independent music artists and to go ahead and encourage them to continue to supply their music for us here in the podcasting arena. In the meantime, I'll remind all of you that I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and please remember, folks, to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Red eye flight, come down to me. I got somewhere else to be. I'll be leaving here at 6 a.m. to see my family. All my sweaters, they've been packed. The bitter cold won't make me crack. Once I get there, I don't know. I don't care how I'm coming back. 'Cause I would walk a thousand miles. I would walk a thousand miles. Through the snow, rain, or bitter cold to be back home for Christmas. I've been gone too long to say, but I'm coming anyway. Any way I can to leave this town and get back home today. Let the snow fall through the air. I got 8 long hours to spare. I'll be waiting at the airport bar for 3, but I don't care. 'Cause I would walk a thousand miles. I would walk a thousand miles. Through the snow, rain, or bitter cold to be back home for Christmas. But this long flight don't bother me. 3 men and shepherds came to see a baby born this morning miles away from their locality. An angel singing clear. You know he found me. So I would walk a thousand miles. I would walk a thousand miles. Through the snow or rain, or check out lines or traffic jams. And I would walk a thousand miles. I would walk a thousand miles. Through the snow or rain, or winter storm, to be back home for Christmas. I would walk a thousand. would walk 1,000 miles through the snow and the rain, or bitter cold, to be back home for Christmas.